All right, welcome into episode 86 of the Natural Hat Trick Podcast alongside Jamie Eisner and country music star Craig Morgan. I'm Luke Lipinski. See, that's what I want to hear.
Sort of a country twang, though, I probably. Yeah. I didn't know you were coming out with that.
Brightens my day.
Yeah, that was the brightest moment of your very, very, very dark day.
How's everybody enjoying their scalding hot iced coffees that I brought today?
Yeah, good? Yeah.
Yeah, all right. That's.
I feel like a lot of time was invested in these coffees.
Yeah. So they weren't really worth it, as it turns out.
I like mine.
Okay. Well, as long as Craig's happy, I'm happy. We've got one team in the Stanley Cup. We've got two other teams playing a Game 7 tomorrow. We still have the possibility of an Ottawa-Nashville Cup, which I would assume is going to drive a lot of people to Cavs-Warriors. And I can't say I blame them at that point, but...
It'll be the first time the NBA playoffs are worth watching.
Yeah. It's the NHL and the NBA are going to completely switch sides right in the finals if things go the way they might go tomorrow night. So I guess let's start with that series. Ottawa-Pittsburgh. Since the last time we talked, Pittsburgh won Game 4, dominated Game 5, and then they go back to Ottawa for Game 6 last night. Senators get a 2-1 win, and here we are, Game 7. Thoughts? I consider Game 7 in almost every series a coin toss.
It's tough to get a gauge because it feels like every time in this postseason a team gets blown out, they come back the next game and they prolong the series.
Yeah.
I mean, Pittsburgh's got to. Pittsburgh's got to win this.
I'm still thinking they have to. I thought they were going to win last night when they got the lead. As soon as they got the lead, I said, "Okay, they have a lead. The Senators are not a team that's built to play from behind. Granted, it was one goal, but I thought really Pittsburgh was going to win that game, and they dominated long stretches of that game. Anderson just had a brilliant performance last night.
Okay, so I've got two questions for you. Okay. One is there are a couple ways to look at this game from the Penguins' perspective, and I know Mike Sullivan took the angle of. We're happy with the way we played. We feel like if we just do that again in Game 7, you know, we'll be fine. There's two ways, I think, to look at that. You outplayed Ottawa. I think at this point, I don't know that we could have said, well, I guess maybe a week ago, they're clearly the better team than Ottawa, and yet you just lost the game. So at what point, now it's one and done. I mean, what says you don't go out there and outplay Ottawa by leaps and bounds on Thursday night and lose 2-1 again?
No, it could happen. Look, nobody can predict what's going to happen in that game, but I like Pittsburgh's experience. I like what they have. Granted, I don't like their blue line so much, but they could be getting...
What blue line?
Yeah. It's an AHL blue line right now, which is crazy, but they could get Schultz back. Patrick Hornquist could be back as well. Those would be big additions for the Penguins for Game 7.
Yeah, that would be huge.
Yeah, it would help them a lot, and if those guys are back, and my guess is they will be back, I still see them winning this series, and then we can talk about the repeat bid, which is a really cool story.
If you're Pittsburgh, though, are you viewing that as a positive that you outplayed the other team and lost? Or, I mean, there is a way that I could make a case how you could view that as a negative, too.
I think teams always look at whether they are generating chances or not, because they know the odds are in their favor if they're generating that volume of chances when they're outplaying a team. You're probably going to lose once in a while. You're going to have these fluke things happen, but it's probably not going to happen on a consistent basis.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, you not to steal a phrase from a bad basketball team, but you got to trust the process.
Oh, boy. All right.
And, if you're doing the right things and generating scoring opportunities and generating scoring chances, and it's just not your night, the puck's not going in, Craig Anderson stopping everything you see. Again, you don't want that to happen. You would much rather win 1-0 and be outplayed because you'd rather win. But I don't think you change your strategy because of that, because it was working. It just didn't give that end result that you were looking for in that one particular game.
Are we quoting team cliches now?
Yes. So, we're going to take it one game at a time.
Pittsburgh, this works on a couple levels, actually. For Pittsburgh in Game 7, the standard is the standard.
Absolutely. And you got to give 110%.
Yeah. I mean, take it one shift at a time.
Do your job.
Get pucks in
do
deep.
Do your job.
Make sure.
Hard in the corners.
Get pucks in deep, yeah, and win the battles in the corners.
Now you guys are just going broad cliches. I was doing team-specific cliches.
Oh, I'm sorry. All
right. Just taking these two.
What about a high compete level? You think that would help either one of these
level.
Teams? Let me ask you the second question. I watched this game in a sports bar last night, which is fun, but you don't hear explanations when a goal is deemed a goal and then not called a goal. So,
I'm not sure that helps even when you do.
That's kind of what I was getting at. But Pittsburgh was up 1-0, but it looked like they had scored earlier and that they would be up 2-0. I genuinely don't know, and I purposely didn't ask you guys this until we got on the air. Was there a legitimate reason why that first goal was waved off? Because it was originally called a goal, was it not?
I believe so.
Okay. I have no answer for you.
Yeah, I
don't know anymore. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know, define legitimate when it comes to that rule.
If you were a Penguins fan watching that game at home, no, not a Penguins fan. If you're just a neutral fan watching that game at home.
Did he stab him in the crease?
Do you feel like one team got screwed over or the other?
No.
Okay.
Not at this point. You know what I think they should do?
Well, not at this point,
you know,
just because
you change this rule.
Nobody knows what it is, like an NFL catch.
There's a question on goaltender interference. They should put on the big screen somebody rolling two dice. Here we go. And that's how they should decide it. I mean, it should just be completely random.
Well, as long as it's not a lottery.
Anyway, doesn't it?
Because if it's a lottery, the Coyotes would lose every single time. We need to make it more fair than that. Okay. Well, because I don't know, and that would have feasibly put Pittsburgh up 1-0 earlier. Maybe they go up 2-0 at that point, and that's a different game. But I know that we keep wanting to write Ottawa off. The more I watch of Ottawa, I really don't want to see them play Nashville.
Really,
in
the way
Stanley
you worded
Cup.
That is correct. We keep wanting to write Ottawa off because none of us wants to watch them in the final.
I give them a ton of credit for getting this far, but Pittsburgh Nashville would be a great series.
It would be.
You beat Boston and the Rangers.
Well, they might beat Pittsburgh though. Ooh. Too.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, you got
to
give them credit.
You'd have to give them some credit, and then we'd have to watch the final. Anyway, let's not talk about Ottawa, because I don't want to talk about Ottawa.
They're not going away.
I'm hoping they won't have to after tomorrow.
Hopefully they will after tomorrow.
Let's talk about Nashville then, because they're in. That was probably my favorite series of the playoffs, just in the sense of it didn't matter what the score was in any game. Both teams were capable of coming back. Both teams did. This kind of goes to why I want to see a Nashville-Pittsburgh Stanley Cup, because I think Pittsburgh would bring out the best in Nashville, and you would have games that started 2-0 and ended 5-4 the other way. I genuinely couldn't tell you who would win that series, because I think Nashville's the best team in these playoffs right now.
But they're without Ryan Johansson now. For
Yeah, now they're beat up too.
That's. I mean, Mike Fisher will probably be back for game one, but losing your top center is a big blow. And I'll give him all kinds of credit for winning two games without him. That's quite an accomplishment, but when you have to do it over a longer period of time, that's when the hole starts to show up.
Especially if a team like Pittsburgh gets in, that have two of the best centers in the world.
Crosby and Malkin. So
that wouldn't be great.
It becomes a big issue. On the flip side, Pittsburgh's banged up blue line is going up against the best blue line in the NHL. And really, Nashville, when you look at them, they've been driven from their back end all throughout the postseason anyway. That's where it's all starting for them. Those top four have been phenomenal in this postseason.
I've tried to describe to people, because we're getting to the point in the season where more and more people that aren't necessarily hardcore hockey fans, whether it's because the NBA playoffs have been abysmal or just because everybody pretty widely acknowledges that the NHL playoffs are great entertainment. Maybe they just don't know the individual players or stories. But we're getting to the point in the season where more and more people are just watching the Stanley Cup playoffs that don't necessarily follow hockey all year long. And I've tried to make the distinction to them that the reason Nashville is so good defensively is because they are loaded with defensive talent, whereas Ottawa just stacks four guys on the blue line and waits for everybody to fall asleep, basically.
Right.
So if they play each other, I don't know who's ever going to score.
In Nashville, when you talk about them being such a great defensive team, it's not just, they defend well on their own end, which they do. I mean, these guys, they get sticks in passing lanes. They're mobile, so they can cover gaps. Their gaps are good. They cover ground quickly, but the thing that they do the best is they retrieve pucks so quickly and they get them back up to the forwards. They don't spend a lot of time defending, and that's the best kind of defense.
They're just a fun team,
guys.
Too.
Yeah, they are. And let's give it up to Peter Laviolette for reaching the cup final with three different teams.
People were calling
first American coach to do it in forever.
And there were people calling for his job in December. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. Yeah. Now, I know that it happens a lot in sports these days. People were saying, well, this is an underperforming team. You know, we talked about how high of expectations we had coming into the season, and they didn't exactly get off to a great start. But, you know,
if this was Florida, he would have been fired. You can just say it.
Fun anecdote in the story I did on Laviolette today. I talked to Ray Whitney, who played for him in Carolina when they won the Cup in 2006. And I guess when Doug Waite was traded there, he took the ice for his first practice, and they're skating. They're just going hard and fast. And he said, halfway through the practice, Doug Waite turns to Witz and says, did you guys do something wrong last night? Because he thinks this is punishment. And Ray said, this is just the way we did it. You know, a lot of teams will go hard and fast to start the practice. But as fast as we did it and as long as we did it was probably unusual for teams, and other players just weren't used to it. And you've seen that sort of pace throughout this playoffs with Nashville. Both their depth, and they just come at you with so much speed. They're relentless.
How do you view them as a team? And I know we kind of touched on this last week, I don't look at what's good for the sport based on the markets that are in the Stanley Cup or really the Super Bowl or whatever, the NBA Finals, World Series. I look at it more as just the entertainment value for the league and for, especially for hockey, people that are just watching just because it's the Stanley Cup and it's on the regular NBC network. So take the team from the East out of it, whoever it is right now. Just looking at Nashville, I know there's this thought of, well, they're kind of a smaller market team in hockey. That certainly didn't originate in Nashville. I think Nashville is one of the best stories this sport's got going for them. You've got a marketable, recognizable star player in PK Subban. You've got a ton of country music stars and Marcus Mariota and celebrities at their games, and that place is crazy for their hockey team.
I wonder how that translates to fans, because country music clearly transcends Nashville. It's all over the country, but it's, you know, in certain parts of the country, maybe those people, because the country music stars or the fans are talking about it, maybe that brings them. I have no idea if it's going to have any impact or if it's just a short blip and it'll be over. But it is cool to see, I guess, a new sort of fan base or a new segment of society talking about hockey.
Yeah. Garth Brooks is singing the national anthem for game one or game three. That's going to be news.
I was going to bring that up, by the way. I may be the only one who doesn't appreciate the anthem singers before Nashville games. This star-studded cast. NHL.com had a story that said the list comprises a who's who of country music. To me, it's more like a who's that list, because I didn't know half the names.
Because it's not Barbara Streisand.
Well, I know Carrie Underwood, not just because she's married to Mike Fisher, but I don't know who Luke Bryan is. Little Big Town, is that a person or a band? I don't even know.
If you're his friend, it's a person.
Okay,
well,
I know Vince Gill. I might know Lady Antebellum, but I might be mistaking her for Lady Gaga. I don't know. So.
Not the same.
subtle differences between them.
So, but for a year, I don't know who that is.
Notably absent is Craig Morgan.
Yes, that's true.
Well, see, let's not let the secret out of the bag.
Saving him for a deciding cup
for game. You really are the same person.
I don't know how, if I'm a neutral fan or a new fan or just a casual fan of hockey, how I could watch the environment that's in Nashville at Bridgestone Arena right now and not get sucked into it a little bit.
100% with you.
It's a crazy atmosphere. I was there for the playoffs 5 years ago when the Coyotes were in the second round against them, and that was an unbelievable atmosphere a half decade ago. And it's a beautiful arena. It's a beautiful area. It's right at the end of I can't remember what the road is, but there's just strips of bars on both sides.
It's fantastic.
Amazing. And PK Subban was talking the other day about how when he first got traded there, that a lot of players said, "You don't know how lucky you are. We wish we would do anything." "We will do anything to play in Nashville."
It's one of the few places where and that's the little secret that. You know, all the northern fans will talk about these non-traditional markets and trash talk them and just talk about how they don't.
On the internet too.
We've never heard.
No
that
way.
But the reality is, when you talk to the players about the places they want to play, Nashville and here, a lot of players just retire here when they're done playing. Yeah. They love being in the valley.
Talk to anybody that travels with a team, and I've done this. I just do this because I just want to know. Like, it's not for any sort of story or anything, but I'll ask people, like, "Hey, where's your favorite NHL city that you guys travel to?" And, you know, I mean, there's certainly
Chicago,
places.
New York are on the list, of
course.
But invariably, Nashville is one of their top three, and for a lot of people, it's the number one because it's not as crazy as New York or Chicago, but it's just the right mix of everything. I've never been there for a game.
It's a beautiful city.
I would love to be there.
Beautiful city. I have nothing but nice things to say about it.
Jamie has nothing but nice things to say about it.
I do. I have nothing but nice things to say about Nashville. You know, but you're talking about, you know, people that are just make comments on the internet about, you know, fan bases in non-traditional markets. You just do it long enough, and then you can work for the Golden Knights.
Here we go. This is Vegas's official initiation in the NHL.
So, weird side note, by the way, and I'll throw this out. I'm going to write about this event when I actually get to the bottom of this. So, the Vegas Golden Knights signed a TV deal on Tuesday.
Yes.
With Root Sports, which was a surprise to everybody in the market, because everybody thought they were going to go with Fox Sports West. In that deal, this is a last note in my notebook that I did yesterday. In that deal, they have broadcasting rights to, like, Colorado, Utah, Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, all these hockey hotbeds that you think of.
Yeah, especially Idaho.
And also parts of eastern Southern California and parts of western Arizona. I've been able to verify that, in fact, they do have rights to parts of western Arizona, along with the Coyotes. It's like this overlap. But the people that I were talking to at the Coyotes were not aware that Vegas was being given part of western Arizona. So I want to see how this plays out. Mm-hmm. When I actually found, I got a release from Root Sports telling me
the battle for Kingman.
It's Kingman, Bullhead City, Mojave. Like, it's Mojave County is what it is.
The few places actually hotter on a daily basis than the city of Phoenix.
I just like the idea of the battle for Kingman. It sounds very epic.
Now, someone had told me initially with this deal that Flagstaff might be part of it. I was like, wait, that's a whole different combo. This is going to be a real problem, but it's not.
Okay.
It's not. It's just those cities that I mentioned.
So we already have a rivalry between the Coyotes
and
the Golden
Knights. Seriously, this little overlap, it'd be interesting to see.
Meet at the Hoover Dam.
Which side are you on, Kingman?
Freeze over. The next outdoor game.
Finally, Kingman gets the recognition he deserves.
The little outdoor game at that casino you just get across the border that nobody stops at because you're so close to Vegas anyway.
It's like Havasu City where they have the London Bridge.
Yeah, and they have they have the helicopter rides too, right?
I can see this being the site of just warring factions.
Stay at the Tri-State Inn. I think it's like $39.99 on the side of the road.
I will tell you, do not mess with Coyotes fans. I don't know about the Vegas fans yet because I don't know them yet. But
Coyotes fans are definitely steeled.
They will fight for Kingman. Don't you worry about that. So anyway, when you get to the bottom of that, please explain.
Seriously, it was like a throwaway note. The last note I was throwing in a notebook just because I thought, huh. And then as the further I dug, I was like, wait, this is getting crazy. Because nobody seems to know. I actually spoke to someone at Fox Sports Arizona as well. And they didn't know that Arizona was going to be part of it. Fox Sports Arizona, of course, broadcasts the Coyotes game. So you'd think they'd be in on it. So I don't know how this process went down.
How are they getting part of Eastern California, too? There's a lot of teams in California.
I was wondering if the Kings and Ducks even know this yet. So
I feel like the Kings have checked out for a little bit while they work on all their contracts.
Yeah.
Their player contracts. They don't necessarily care about their TV contracts at this point. If you're marketing the Stanley Cup with Nashville in it, what's your angle?
Please God, no Ottawa.
Well, yes. We're all thinking it.
That'd be the motto? Please God, no Ottawa?
Well, let's say it is Ottawa. I'm assuming you're focusing on Nashville.
God, it's Ottawa.
Because Jamie's right. There's no way to watch Nashville and how just fired up that arena is. And they're in a frenzy before the puck even drops.
We have games. Then we have a game in Ottawa that's not sold out.
I would assume they'll sell out the Stanley Cup, right?
Well,
it's a big assumption.
I guess it
is.
You know, it is a 30-minute drive. 30 minutes? 30 minutes?
Not going to get a lot of sympathy from fans here. I don't believe the Coyotes have ever not sold out a playoff game.
They've sold out every playoff game.
Now, look, I'm generally not somebody who gets that upset about attendance anyway. I think it's way overblown, the importance of it.
Yeah, but when you're in the conference finals, sell your arena out.
Yeah, you better have that place full. That's just ridiculous.
Find a way.
They did sell out one of those games that people were saying they didn't sell out. They're just empty seats, which is weird in and of itself.
Yeah. Well, you got to get creative. Right? Teams get creative all the time with attendance. You got to get creative and find a way to get those seats sold or given away or something.
Building's got to be full.
Yeah. It's such an odd dynamic, too, because the deeper they go, it's been a learning experience for me that other Canadian fan bases are not pulling for them.
No.
In fact, they're openly rooting against them. There's a lot of Maple Leafs fans that are suddenly Penguins fans that I'm sure that pains them. They would rather root for Phil Kessel than Ottawa at this point. But, I mean, you see the stuff out there where Montreal fans and Toronto fans and Vancouver fans especially are all binding together, rooting for whoever Ottawa's playing. It's been, 24 years since a Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup?
But they're not behind them. Yeah.
If they're five wins away.
Proudfoot, but she's been banging this drum throughout the playoffs. Look, it's not Canada's team. Okay?
She's one of the ones I was reading. Yeah.
It works the same as here. It's not like, we're rooting for the Kings now.
Yeah, that's the funny thing to me. Like, why we just assume other countries just root for whatever team is from their country no matter what?
But
that's a very American thing.
It's such a big deal to Canada. Some of this is on Canada for constantly pointing out or bringing up how much they want the cup back in Canada. And now here we are. This isn't game three of an 82-game season. There's a team five wins away from bringing the cup to Canada, and they just don't seem to care at all.
No, they as you said, they seem actively disengaged.
That's strange to me. I'm sorry. It is. If Major League Baseball only had seven American teams and all the other teams were in Canada, I feel like,
I don't know.
If the U.S. hadn't won a World Series in a quarter century, they'd be pulling for the team from the U.S.
I mean, maybe
they'd celebrate it after the fact.
Or they would say we like it. We would like to see a non-traditional market like Nashville win because they're a fun, exciting team. But I don't think if you pull people like, I'm a huge Preds fan now for the rest of the postseason, I don't think you're getting that from non-traditional markets. I think we just try to group people into these narratives that we like to say that are nice and cookie cutter and pretty to say and talk about.
But I feel like they group themselves into this
narrative.
And
part of
though.
It they do too, but also I just think that gets overplayed so much for markets that are outside of the U.S. in any sport. It's one thing if they have one team. Okay, I get the saying the Canada's getting behind the Blue Jays because they literally have no other baseball team.
But if this was Vancouver, like when Vancouver was close to winning the cup before they burnt half their city down, I feel like
they were getting more support than Ottawa, but they weren't exactly getting what Toronto-like support from the first round. I just think I don't know if it's as big a deal in Canada as it is in the U.S. Huh. I think it's a good talking point they like to say when they're mad. But I don't know if they actually, on a season-by-season basis, care if it's not their team.
So we make fun of them when all seven teams miss the playoffs, but then when their teams are about to win the cup, they're not even really that fired up for it, essentially. It's like a lose-lose.
It's the wrong team.
But I feel like if it was Toronto, so many fans in Canada hate Toronto that I don't know.
I'm sure the province of Quebec would not be rooting for the Maple Leafs.
Right, and if Montreal were in it, there would be a lot of enemies, too. Again, I think it's...
It's got to be like Edmonton. Edmonton's like
the neutral.
Say
it's tribalism. It's more dictated by cities than it is by the nation.
And if it's Edmonton or Calgary, like, oh, you know, that's cute. Those cute little teams over in Alberta. Let's throw them a bone a little bit.
Won four times.
Because I don't think there's a hatred from Eastern Canada for anything in Alberta. I don't think there is that rivalry. It's like, oh, okay, it'd be cool to see them win, whatever. If my team can't win, I guess I'll
I don't know if Toronto loves Brian Burke.
No, but yeah, I don't think teams act forward against presidents.
Yeah, the a region of the country. I mean, it's probably it was the same for the U.S. until the last election, and now there's definitely a disdain for a certain part of the country from the urban areas.
Oh, interesting way.
But
to
moving on from that. Yes.
I just if it was the Maple Leafs about to win the cup, I would expect Montreal Canadiens fans to not be happy and vice versa. But right. I just felt like Ottawa was such – I would have grouped Ottawa into that area with Calgary and Edmonton where they don't really have any huge rivals. And now that they're this close, why wouldn't you rally around it?
Calgary and Edmonton have each other as huge rivals. But, they just don't.
And as much as the more I watch Ottawa play, the less I want to have to watch them play anymore in the Stanley Cup. I got to give it up to Erik Karlsson.
He's so good.
We keep saying
he's so good.
We do, but specifically with the injuries and the way he twisted his ankle up, two games ago and is still out there playing? I mean, everybody knows he has multiple fractures in his foot, and he's hurting it more, and he's still playing.
Erik Karlsson deserves every ounce of adulation and credit he's getting. Every ounce. He deserves it 100% of it. But I still don't want to watch that team as a whole.
Are we just going to skip over the fact that Jamie's wearing a shirt that looks like Ottawa's throwback jersey?
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. The red and black stripe.
I was thinking Blackhawk colors all along, so I was...
Blackhawk's throwbacks look similar, too, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah.
From the 30s?
Yeah.
That was clearly done on purpose. Jamie's a closet Ottawa fan. He's just been waiting.
Yeah, I've just been waiting. I got my Kyle Turris jersey.
Want to get to the locals?
Yeah, let's do that real
Dylan
quick.
Dylan Strome and Craig Cunningham news?
Yes.
Yes.
Craig Cunningham, of course, named the Pro Scout today. Wow, I threw that back to Luke and he looked at me.
Well, because I'm trying to check the time. We got a guest coming on here in a couple minutes, too. But
Craig Cunningham,
I want to
expect to name the Pro Scout in the Coyotes organization. Nice move for a guy who went through hell and back, obviously, last season, collapsed on the ice, ended up losing his leg, nearly died. It's a great gesture by the Coyotes, who, by the way, made another great gesture last week when they brought Oliver Ekman-Larsson's brother, Kevin, in with a one-year contract with Tucson of the AHL. Kevin Ekman-Larsson is not going to make the NHL roster, probably ever. I can't see it happening, but this is a great move. They just lost their mom. They're going to be close to each other. I don't know how they're going to do the living arrangement yet. I guess that's going to be ironed out. It's a little too far to be getting to practice every day.
I feel like all the new players live with Oliver anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, and
or at least drive his cars, right?
It's those types of moves that I think sometimes fans don't necessarily understand on the surface, but... One, it's the right thing to do, and two, you got to keep your best players in a good state of mind. Yep. And Oliver
by the way, you can give them a contract extension next summer.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we did this for you, and I don't want to be jaded and saying that's the only reason. It's a really cool gesture.
Well, I think
really
the Cunningham thing shows that the Kevin Ekman-Larsson thing is not only done for Oliver's contract. I think that is.
And they're familiar with Kevin Ekman-Larsson. He's been to some of their rookie camps before.
Yeah.
I mean, they're familiar with who he is. This is not just some random player that nobody ever heard of before. He has been in. He's not going, like Craig said, he's not going to make the NHL team probably ever.
But he is somebody that has been in development camp, and they know of him, and they've seen him play. It's not like this is completely out of the blue.
And how cool for the two of them to have each other.
Absolutely.
After what they just went through.
Yeah, I mean, Oliver did everything you could ever ask from a player on your team just by playing last year halfway around the world from where he wanted to be, I'm sure. And then also playing hurt all season long. And, I mean, that's not the only good thing he's done for this franchise. But, yeah, I thought – and you were the first one that kind of tweeted that out after the story came out of – this is just good for the two of them after what they've both been through over the last year. So that was a cool gesture. But back to Craig Cunningham, this was kind of brought up towards the end of the season that this might happen. But I think this is a really cool gesture because he clearly still wants to be involved in hockey. And this is this is the best way I think that you can have him involved at this point.
This is part of how you build organizations. And I don't want to say it's just, nepotism should rule the day. But when you have loyalty like this, when you reward people who have done something for your organization or meant something to your organization, that just sends a good message to not only people within your organization, but other people that might be looking at your organization, free agents, etc. It's the way you run a classy organization.
And you give him a chance to basically start a new career. It's not like you just named him the head coach. You give him a job that if he embraces it and thrives in it, then he can move up the ladder. It gives him something to work on, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, he's somebody that is highly regarded by Coyotes. Anybody who's played with him. I mean, if you remember some of the tributes, I mean, anybody who played with in Boston, in Arizona, he's a very well-liked player.
There's guys that never played with him.
There's no downside. There's absolutely no downside. There's only positive. And you know what? You never know. You might get more than even you think you're going to get from having him within your organization.
Yeah. I mean, he's a great personality, great hockey mind. So you don't know what the upside is here, but at least now you've opened that door for him and for yourself. We'll get to Dylan Strome in a second, right? But we're going to have Sid Ziegler on right now about sports.
Is he on yet?
No, he's not here yet.
We could talk about Dylan Strome.
Okay.
I think we have time.
Well, go ahead then.
He had 7 points in the Memorial Cup game. By the way, they scored 12 goals.
Yeah.
This is the Final Four, and you scored 12 goals against a team.
Yeah, we need to put this in perspective for people that don't follow junior hockey that much. This is basically like your Final Four teams in college football, right? I mean, winning the OHL is like winning the SEC, and this is basically the hockey
equivalent. It's like your Final Four, but one team just gets a free pass.
Yeah, and one team
just... Right, the weird host thing.
We'll call them Alabama.
I still don't understand. How do you get up for a season when you know you're guaranteed a spot?
Apparently you don't, because Windsor didn't have a very good season.
I can't remember the last
big game with Erie.
Yeah. I don't know how your season starts at the Memorial Cup if you're that team. How do you push forward? Well, there's literally nothing we can do to get us in a better place than we will be automatically.
You could win the OHL championship.
They should just have one more
junior
league.
Yeah,
like maybe merge Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Alberta all together, or just keep Alberta and do it the way it is. Yeah, maybe like a central
Manitouchewan.
Yeah,
I think Manitouchewan.
Feel like okay, so you got three leagues represented, three league champions. Oh, by the way, St. John was the regular season champion of the Q. So why does that happen
confusing.
Like it does too?
There's
some weirdness to this, but anyway, Dylan Strome had 7 freaking points, 4 goals. The first one really wasn't his goal; he was just in the area. But he scored 3 more after that and had 3 assists as well. That's a Memorial Cup record.
The year he's had, and we talked about this when he got sent down. If you're the Coyotes, when you finally, after what, 6 weeks, sent him down, you could not have asked for a better final junior season from Dylan Strome. We'll see how it translates to the NHL, but what is it, 75 goals, or 75 points rather, in 35 games, OHL first team honors.
Captain,
played for Team Canada.
Played in the World Championship. Junior World Championship.
Yeah, the World Junior Championships. They win the OHL title. They're not just there because they're the host team.
And now he's
setting records.
Yeah, and they look like the favorite to win the Memorial.
Yeah, they do. And as Luke pointed out on Twitter after the game, he's made the most of his opportunity for what looks like his last season.
And now it's about the summer for him. Steve Sullivan's quote, who was just promoted from Director of Player Development to Assistant General Manager. He needs to get in the gym, get stronger. He has to work on his feet, quick feet on and off the ice. Those are the two main things. Everything else with Dylan is high-end or elite. So you know what you got to do this summer.
Yeah.
Dedicate yourself, build those legs, work with Don Bray, do whatever you have to do. And look, he's not going to suddenly become a fast skater. That's not going to happen. You don't do that.
But he doesn't necessarily need to be fast.
No,
I've talked
to people like Don will tell you, if you can probably improve someone's skating, their speed, like 10%. That can make all the difference.
Just on technique.
Yeah.
Yeah, on technique, exactly. And strength, too, right?
If he really is elite in the other areas, there's a lot of players that succeed in the NHL that are just fast. They're not necessarily elite in the other areas.
But you know where to be. You can read the game. You can anticipate.
If you average speed, you can make all those other things work. He can't be below average, but if you can just be an average speed with the other skills that he has, he can be an effective top six center.
You can only project so much, again, from what he's doing right now, but if the next step for him is showing that dedication off the ice, I think it's somewhat fair to read in, and maybe this is because we've all met him before, but just the way he embraced going back to junior this year and doing everything they've asked leads me to believe he is going to embrace everything he has to do off the ice. Now we just have to see if it works or not.
You hope, too, that he's learned from his brother's experience from in New York with the Islanders. And you know, we talked to them last year when Dylan made his debut. He said he talked to Ryan quite a bit about what that was like, and there were some missteps, some mistakes that Ryan made in terms of dedication, off-ice stuff. Hopefully Dylan's learned from that, because he's going to need to dive all in this summer. This is not a small thing they're asking from him. They need a lot of buy-in here and a lot of dedication, a lot of time and a lot of work to get to where they want him to be with his lower body strength, his skating, like Sully said, with his quick feet.
And he was drafted to – nothing against Ryan Strome, but when the Coyotes drafted Dylan Strome, they expected a more productive player than what Ryan Strome has been. I think that's fair to say, right? Took him with the third pick overall and one of the best drafts in recent memory. So, and he plays a center position that they absolutely need him to step in and thrive. I think that just you have to put yourself in his shoes, and I know the term student of the game gets thrown around a lot, but he really is. I mean, this is a guy that if he's not playing hockey, is studying hockey. And if he's in a spot where it's like, Dylan, just work on your skating and put some weight on, and you're going to be an NHL player, I got to think being that close is going to be enough motivation to push him over the top here. Now, I'm not saying that makes him instantly a number one elite center by any means, and ideally that's what the Coyotes need him to become down the line, but we'll see. It's a good step in the right direction. All right, we're joined now by Sid Ziegler, the co-founder of OutSports, to get perspective here on these playoffs that I think we need at this point. Craig, you want to start this one off for us?
Yeah, Sid, thanks first off for joining us here. An interesting time last couple weeks in professional sports in general between the NHL, Major League Baseball, and the NBA. But for the moment, I want to focus on what Ryan Getzlaf said in Game 4 of the Western Conference Final win. And I'm gonna use the word because I want to put it out there, when he referred to a referee as a cocksucker. And here's what he said after the game when he was finally asked about it. This was his quasi-apology. A situation like that, where I'm on the bench by myself, frustration set in. There was obviously some words said, not necessarily directed at anyone in particular. It was just kind of a comment. I've got to be a little more responsible for the words I choose. Dicey there, but then it gets, in my opinion, far worse. Definitely as a father, as somebody that takes a lot of pride in this game and the respect for it, it's tough to see somebody refer to it as a, well, he didn't use this exactly, but as a homophobic slur. I didn't mean it in that manner in any way. For that to take that route was very disappointing for me. My question to you, how do you parse this excuse, this explanation provided by Ryan Getzlaf, that when he called no one in particular a cocksucker, he didn't intend it as a homophobic slur?
The NHL's reaction to this has been particularly troubling for a couple of reasons. One, by their failure to suspend him, they're saying that this word is okay. And I know that the NHL is saying publicly, oh, well, no, our $10,000 fine of this $9 million a year athlete means that we're taking this very seriously, and you can't say this anymore. But as you know, playing time is the currency that players value the most. And so, you know, that what I look at is the NHL's reaction, which was frankly piss poor. But the more important part is that there's no mandatory sensitivity training on this. And they're claiming that Ryan Getzlaf is a good guy and he didn't mean this and he doesn't really need sensitivity training. But with what you just said tells me he has absolutely no idea what he just said and what it means to somebody who's actually a cocksucker like myself. So, and the tone with which he said it, and the manner in which he said it, how he directed a person, and then and claimed it wasn't directed at anyone, when the NHL even admits that he was directing it to somebody. So, you know, it's the NHL's response to this has been particularly bad, because it's clear through his non-apology, which is, as I said, the worst I've ever heard, that he absolutely needs a stiffer punishment and some training.
It is moments like this where I look at the league, when I look at the You Can Play project. You know, Ryan Kesler, his teammate, by the way, hasn't said a word. He's the spokesperson. He's the ambassador for the Ducks. Getzlaf himself is a captain. It's hard to look at this as anything more than hypocrisy when we have events like this, and this is the response.
All of these sports leagues are doing what they feel they need to do to look good, to look like they are marching forward into 2017, 2018, and they've embraced diversity. But just today, the NBA announced that it's going right back into North Carolina with its All-Star game as soon as humanly possible in 2019, despite the fact that the state legislature in North Carolina just again mandated discrimination in the state and passed a law preventing any city from protecting its LGBT citizens from discrimination. So the NHL wants to partner with the You Can Play project and look good and have an Hockey is for Everyone month, when their actions on this clearly say that hockey is not for everyone.
Why don't you think the leagues get it? And I think we talked about this a little bit on the pre-show before we were on the air about the same things you were talking about, this being used more as a PR stunt for leagues when they have these projects than actually them wanting to create meaningful change in the sports world or in the world in general. Why do they not get it? What is the disconnect there?
If I was the commissioner of the NHL, Ryan Getzlaf would have gotten a one-game suspension for the playoffs. And he would have had mandatory sensitivity training, and the entire team would have had mandatory sensitivity training. That's because I'm a gay man, because I understand what that word means. I understand what's behind that word, and I also understand that when Ryan Getzlaf's gay teammates and gay opponents hear him use that word, it puts them even deeper in the closet. The reason that he didn't get a suspension or mandatory sensitivity training is because there aren't openly gay men making these decisions in the NHL. The straight white men believe that they know everything, and Bettman, as a straight white man, can sit there and talk to the other straight white men around him and decide how homophobic something is or how racist something is without ever bringing in a gay person or a gay man and saying, in the middle of the process of trying to determine what the proper response is, what does this word mean to you? What is it? Tell me about when you were a kid and you heard this word on the playground, what it meant to you. Did it hurt you? Instead of doing that, the straight white guys think they know all the answers. And I see this is the number one problem with all the leagues, a lack of diversity. They're all run by straight white guys. And the straight white guys, they pay a little of attention, but when it really comes to shove, they don't listen to the disenfranchised people that they're affecting.
Sid, what's your sense of the public's response to this? Just in the sense that, you know, if Ryan Getzlaf's apology doesn't seem like he was necessarily deterred from this in the future, if you don't think that the punishment was enough of a deterrent from preventing this in the future, do you think public outcry might do that?
Well, the public outcry has been mixed. I got so many messages from straight white guys telling me that this is not a slur, and I'm a snowflake, and I need to get over it, and calling me all other kinds of names. I mean, some of the emails I got were colorful at best. So, the NHL looks at the public outcry and says, see, There are even some gay people who said that it's not a slur. See, you know, we got this right. So, and Getzloff looks at, we all read what we want to read. And what Ryan Getzloff has read over the last 72 hours is, see, the Ducks fans said I shouldn't have been suspended, and they said it wasn't even a slur. So what's the big deal? So the public outcry will have absolutely zero effect on the NHL or Ryan Getzloff, because they're going to hear exactly what they want to hear.
Some of those Ducks fans actually even offered to pay his fine, which was astounding to me. But you're getting at a sort of a core issue, and I don't want to get too esoteric here, but the importance of language. There's so many people who reacted to it saying, well, some of them simply ignoring the actual meaning of the term and saying, oh, it's just a general insult, which is an absurd explanation for this. But some of the people were saying, people get too offended by words. Language matters, though, doesn't it? It can be hurtful. It should be heeded. I think attention to it should be heeded.
So I agree with them, actually. People do get too emotional and upset about words. You know, it's funny to me. I've realized how many of the lessons that we learned as a kid, people have totally forgotten as adults. Basic things like, put something back where you found it. If I go to the gym one more time and find the 10-pound barbell on the other side of the gym, I'm going to scream. And one of the lessons that we've forgotten as adults is, sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. And you can't. But here's the thing: the word doesn't affect me. Please, I am not emotionally affected by this. I'm an adult gay man. I've had sex with more men than I could possibly count. I am totally proud of who I am. I have a wonderful husband, two beautiful cats. My life is good. You can't hurt me with words. But the people you can hurt with words are the kids who are literally taking knives to their wrists and trying to kill themselves, who are literally swallowing bottles of pills. And not just kids, professional athletes who are thinking about taking a gun to their head because they are gay. I just talked to one the other day whose plan all along has been to just kill himself at the end of his career because he's gay. So I agree with people that we need to try that. We need to empower people to get over the impact of words, but we haven't done that yet. You can't just wave a magic wand and say everybody's got to get over the power of words. Words do have power over us, and one of the things that I try to do is convince gay athletes that when Ryan Getzloff calls somebody a cocksucker, it does not mean he would reject a gay teammate. I would bet my house that if one of Ryan Getzloff's teammates came out tomorrow, he would be right beside his teammate and completely support him and not allow any problems in the locker room. I guarantee it. But that's what Getzloff sees, right? He has gay friends, he has gay family members, and you know everybody's getting so upset about something that he didn't mean. So there's just a disconnect between how the word is heard by gay athletes and what the person means. And that's what we try to reconcile on both sides.
But I think that's part of the reason why language does matter, in that it obviously it can be hurtful to the people you're talking about, but it also frames the way we look at issues. It frames our perspective when we use certain language, and that needs to change as well if we're going to come to a better understanding of these issues.
Yeah, we need to stop using these. Well, beyond whether it should hurt somebody or not, it does. And the fact that it does, instead of blaming the other person, I try to empower the other person to get over it. But a lot of these people blame the other person. Instead of blaming the other person, why don't you just stop using the word? I mean, we've focused on getting rid of so many words in our language, and it's a good thing. There are reasons we should not use the N-word in a derogatory manner. We just need to get over it. Like, I know that a word that I have really focused on getting out of my language is the word bitch, because I have come to understand that women, when they hear that word, hear something very different from how I mean it. So I focused on getting rid of that word out of my language, and guess what? My language is more colorful than ever.
Sid, how much of the issue here, in your mind, especially the way we're talking about this Ryan Getzloff situation, how much of it is just basic ignorance as opposed to actual all-out maliciousness? Is it just simply a matter of educating people?
Well, I think he was clearly trying to be malicious towards that referee. So he wasn't. He was not trying to be malicious towards me or a gay teammate or a lesbian fan. But there was clear malicious intent in the word that he used. You just gotta pick other words. What was the other question? You have the other part of your question? I'm sorry.
Well, no, I just in terms of if we're at a point where education, like how much of a role do you think just simple education exposing people to a situation like this could potentially further the conversation and help the situation going forward?
Well, everything it seems today is a teachable moment. So are some people's eyes going to be open? Absolutely. But the fact that the NHL didn't suspend him, I guarantee you, has empowered some people to use this word. Because the NHL didn't come out and say, this is a gay slur, those are unacceptable, you're sitting for a game. It's opened people up to be able to say, see, the NHL doesn't think it's a gay slur, so it's not, so I'm going to keep using it. I'm going to use it more than I've ever used it, so screw you. That is going to happen. I guarantee it. It's going to happen because the NHL didn't stop it. They did not say no. They said, it's not so bad. It's bad, but it's not so bad. You know, so just, you know, you're going to have to skip the bottle of Dom Perignon after tonight's game.
Sid, one final question before we let you go. Just broad brush strokes. What do you want people to take away from this latest event?
Well, I know that a lot of people don't focus on discipline. I think that part of education is discipline. And I know that last year, when Andrew Shaw was suspended for a playoff game for using the word faggot on the ice, that players, I know for a fact, that players across the NHL said, whoa. Their eyes across the league opened up to the power of that word. And now that didn't happen this time around. Nobody's eyes were opened on this one. No, I don't think nobody can walk away from this saying, oh, the NFL is getting serious about this word. Because discipline might not matter as much to the individual, but to the whole league, to sending a message to the whole league is powerful. And the other part, obviously, is the conversation that we're having about it. Hopefully more people listen. Hopefully people keep trying to think about who's really affected by the language that we use. Like I said, the word bitch affects women very differently from how it affects men. So just take some time to think about how the language affects you outside of who you are. And maybe there's some words you can just kind of get out of there and make the people around you just feel a little better about themselves. And is that really so much to ask?
That's Sid Ziegler, the co-founder of OutSports. Sid, we appreciate you joining us today. We appreciate your time and helping us further this conversation along. And it was great insight, so thank you again.
Well, thanks for talking about it.
For sure.
Thanks, Sid.
That's Sid Ziegler again, of the co-founder of OutSports. There's stuff in there that you just don't think about. You know, it's I think that what I'm going to take most from that conversation is the simple fact that you need to have the conversation. It's a situation where, you know, if it doesn't directly affect you, maybe you don't think about it, you know, because everybody's got their own stuff going on in their lives, so you just kind of brush it off. But when you talk to somebody who it's not only a huge part of their life, but also a part of their profession is sort of examining how this does impact people, you kind of get a different perspective.
Yeah. Just a couple takeaways from that conversation. The first is, to me, there's a simple measuring stick here, a method you can employ anytime you think about whether this term is offensive or not. And Sid outlined this perfectly. Put yourself in that person's shoes. I think one of the greatest voids we have in society is empathy. I don't think people think about how their actions impact others enough. Put yourself in that person's shoes and ask yourself honestly, remove all your biases. Ask yourself honestly how this might impact you. And if you come away from that with an honest answer, you're going to say, huh, I didn't think about that, and I probably should have. The other thing, when we look at this term, okay, and I hear people, I'm reading it on social media all over the place. Oh, it's just a general term. It's just a general insult. People get too offended by that. To me, that's just a lack of understanding. To me, that's just being ill-informed. Did you think about the term itself? What does the term mean, first of all? As we just talked about, it's pretty clear what it means. Okay, Ryan Getzlaf used it on another male. So the idea of another male, and again, sorry we're saying this, but let's be honest here. Let's have an honest conversation. Another male sucking another's cock is somehow offensive. It's an insult. Why is that an insult? How do you not come away from that thinking that's a homophobic slur? Of course it is. Unequivocally, there are no excuses. It is a homophobic slur.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I think Luke asked about education. That was something that we talked a little bit about off the air, of not thinking about what you're actually saying. What does that mean? What is the purpose of what you are saying? And you were, as Craig just eloquently put, stop and think about for 2 seconds what those sequence of words mean and the person you're directing that towards. And what are you intending that to be? You're intending to insult another person. It's simple. You got to take the word. Try to take the word out of your language. And it's really no try. You can easily do it. There are so many fun and interesting things you can call somebody when you're pissed off. There are so many things you can say. As I talked about, my language is more colorful than ever.
Right.
It's just something that, again, it might not affect you, the sayer. It might not affect the person you're saying it to, but it does have an effect on people around you and people you don't even know it has an effect on, and that's when it becomes a massive problem.
And again, as he said, is it so hard to remove that one word from your vocabulary? Is that so essential to your life that you can't just take that one word out?
See, I think something like this is a step in that direction. I mean, he even said it right there. If one of Ryan Getzlaf's teammates came out, you know, he was saying Ryan Getzlaf would probably be supportive of him. And Jamie and I were talking about this before the show. I don't think that Ryan Getzlaf said what he said with the intention of being offensive the way he was offensive. But that's kind of the point. I mean, you or I aren't going to be offended by that. That's just a professional athlete mad at somebody yelling at them on the field of play. That happens every 5 minutes in a sporting event. But the issue is the people that it will offend, it's really going to offend them on a deep level. And that's the whole point. We don't realize that. And that's why I think you have to have a conversation.
And not just offend them, scare them.
Affect them, I think, is almost a better way.
And I think that is equally as important. It's not that being offended is anything to be upset about or that somebody else is offended. But it truly, as we have seen time and time again in the world of sports and way outside of sports, it scares them because there are people in this world that use that maliciously and with intent and act upon it.
Absolutely. So, and the people who excuse it, this really, to me, this feels like an extension of blaming the victim. Oh, you shouldn't take offense to that. Really? Your mind. Alter your thinking on that.
Are you going off? We're sharing a mic, which is why we keep bouncing back and forth.
Weird. Just, I feel like you said, I should start singing here.
Yeah, backup singer, Craig Moore.
No Canada?
We're not doing that. Duet. They might win the cup. You can't do that now. It's a matter of just, I don't know, you just being aware. And you know, like Jamie was saying sort of before the show, and we can kind of combine it now with what Sid said in the sense of if Ryan Getzlaf had a teammate come out, he'd probably support him. Well, kind of to Jamie's point, if Ryan Getzlaf had a teammate that was debating whether or not they should come out, they're less likely to do so now. And I think that's the issue.
And that just goes back to the point we've been making about education. And whether, again, I don't believe that Ryan Getzlaf meant it maliciously to the gay community, but the point, it doesn't matter if he meant it was. And I think that's where education comes in, where if he had known, and because we still have no indication based on a statement that he knows or realizes or cares, quite frankly, that the effect that those words have. If he knew that ahead of time, I would venture to say, based on what Sid said from conversations, that he wouldn't use it again. But that is why that part is so important.
I think that's fair. This was definitely the most serious podcast I've ever done, so it's the most serious podcast we've ever done.
Also the most profane.
Yeah,
that is also true. If you've made it this far,
our apologies if you were offended by that, genuinely. But again, this is it's a quote. It's what he said, and it's an important conversation to have. So let's talk about that term and why it's wrong to use it.
Well, I'm assuming Jamie will put that in the description so people know before they start listening.
Yeah, they'll know well before they get to this point.
Okay, good. That's but, you know, but probably a good move.
But it's a conversation that you have to have. And if we're uncomfortable using the word, that should be all the evidence that you need that maybe we should think about when and where that is used more often.
So next week we'll have Stanley Cup talk.
Yes.
And
hopefully Ottawa won't be in it.
Yeah, if it's Ottawa-Nashville next week, we might be doing like an NFL preview or something just to get you fired up for the upcoming football season. But predictions for Game 7 from the two of you? I think it's going to be 2-1. I just don't know who's going to have two and who's going to have one. This really feels like a coin toss.
I just kind of hope. I just hope the Pens win. I think it makes a much more intriguing and much more aesthetically pleasing final series.
Pittsburgh wins Game 7. Right. And I don't think it'll be 2-1.
Oh, really? Okay. Are we this is my last question before we wrap up. Just to bring it back to the actual elements of hockey on the ice itself, I don't remember a Final Four moving into the Stanley Cup where every team is just so beat up. I mean, Anaheim, too. We talked so much about how Nashville was missing players, but Anaheim was missing their starting goalie and Rickard Rakell and Patrick Eves, who they traded for at the trade deadline and basically had him for 7 playoff games. Is it just a recency bias where I'm sitting here looking at this and saying everybody's hurt this year, it's never happened like this before, or this seems a little out of the ordinary this season?
Yeah, I think we've had injuries like this in the past, but guys have somehow managed to play through them. Now guys are actually out of the lineup, which either tells me that the injuries are even more severe, or maybe NHL players have just gotten a little wiser with the injuries they should play through and the ones they should not.
And it's to big-name players, too. Sometimes you see one big-name injury, and then there's a lot of depth players that are hurt. This is a lot of impact players that have been hurt, all in a relatively short period of time.
I just don't know how any of these teams are surviving and still winning until I realize the teams they're playing are also beat up, too.
Along those lines, and I'm not saying this is going to cut down on injuries. It might. We'd have to see studies, of course, on this. But has the Stanley Cup playoff become too much of a grind? Should there be more time between games than they give teams? I wrote about this a little bit in last week's Craigslist, I think. Especially when teams travel, should you just mandate that there are 2 days at least of rest between games? Of course, you have issues with booking of arenas, but you could probably figure this out, where it's at least 2 days. Because not only are you probably having healthier teams, giving them more rest, you're probably going to see higher quality of hockey if you do that.
I think the comeback to that would be you would never see a defending Stanley Cup champion because the playoffs at that point would last almost 3 months, wouldn't they? If you start extending every series by another three or four days.
Yeah,
I guess not 3 months, but like 2.5 months.
But it will depend on how each series goes. And I think it would also, if they don't set the Stanley Cup schedule in stone and the conference finals happen to not go 7 games, you can save 2 or 3 days right off the top, there. That could make up – that's 1 round's worth of extra games. Or maybe even 2 rounds, depending on how those rounds go, just by not setting the Stanley Cup in stone ahead of time.
It just feels like typically in a Stanley Cup playoff, you have at least 1 or 2 Game 7s in the first round, and then 1 or 2 in the second round, and we're going to have another one here in the third round.
And then that makes you start to wonder, do you go to, even though I'm not a particular huge fan of it, do you go to the NBA's format where if the two teams in that bracket are done and they're under the next round, you take the 2 days off, and you start that next round. And you might start that next round when the other round's in a Game 6 or a Game 7.
Wouldn't the NBA's format just be giving the Capitals and Blackhawks a 3-round bye into the championship? Isn't that what they would have done at this point?
I'd be okay with that.
For the record.
I'm not sure I'm cool with that. All right. Thanks for listening to today's show. For Jamie Eisner and Craig Morgan, I'm Luke Pinsky. Thanks for listening to the Natural Hat Trick Podcast.